And Gandalf said, "The ring is passed on, Bilbo. It would do no good to you or to others if you tried to meddle with it again." Odd sort of remark, just like Gandalf. But he said he was looking after you, so I let things be. I'm frightfully glad to see you safe and sound." He paused and looked at Frodo doubtfully. "Have you got it here?" he asked in a whisper. "I can't help feeling curious, you know, after all I've heard. I should very much like just to peep at it again." "Yes, I've got it," answered Frodo, feeling a strange reluctance. "It looks just the same as ever it did."
"Well, I should just like to see it for a moment," said Bilbo.
When he dressed, Frodo found that while he slept the ring had been hung about his neck on a new chain, light but strong. Slowly he drew it out. Bilbo put out his hand, but Frodo quickly drew back the ring. To his distress and amazement, he found that he was no longer looking at Bilbo. A shadow seemed to have fallen between them, and through it he found himself eyeing a little wrinkled creature with a hungry face and bony, groping hands. He felt a desire to strike him. The music and singing round them seemed to falter, and the silence fell. Bilbo looked quickly at Frodo's face and passed his hand across his eyes.
"I understand now," he said. "Put it away. I'm sorry. Sorry you've come in for this burden. Sorry about everything. Don't adventures ever have an end? I suppose not. Someone else always has to carry on the story. Well, it can't be helped. I wonder if it's any good trying to finish my book. But don't let's worry about it now. Let's have some real news. Tell me all about the Shire."
Frodo hid the ring away, and the shadow passed, leaving hardly a shred of memory. The light and music of Rivendell was about him again. Bilbo smiled and laughed happily. Every item of news from the Shire that Frodo could tell, aided and corrected now and again by Sam, was of the greatest interest to him, from the felling of the least tree to the pranks of the smallest child in Hobbiton. They were so deep in the doings of the four farthings that they did not notice the arrival of a man clad in dark green cloth. For many minutes he stood looking down at them with a smile. Suddenly Bilbo looked up.
"Ah, there you are at last, Dúnadan," he cried.
"Strider," said Frodo, "you seem to have a lot of names."
"Well, Strider is one that I haven't heard before anyway," said Bilbo. "What do you call him that for?" "They call me that in Bree," said Strider, laughing, "and that is how I was introduced to him."
"And why do you call him Dúnadan?" asked Frodo.
"The Dúnadan," said Bilbo. "He's often called that here, but I thought you knew enough Elvish at least to know Dúnadan, Man of the West, Númenórian. But this is not the time for lessons." He turned to Strider. "Where have you been, my friend? Why weren't you at the feast? The Lady Arwen was there."
Strider looked down at Bilbo gravely.
"I know," he said, "but often I must put mirth aside. Eladan and Elro here have returned out of the wild unlooked for, and they had tidings that I wished to hear at once."
"Well, my dear fellow," said Bilbo, "now you've heard the news, can't you spare me a moment? I want your help in something urgent. Elrond says this song of mine is to be finished before the end of the evening, and I'm stuck. Let's go off into a corner and polish it up." Strider smiled.
"Come then," he said. "Let me hear it."
Frodo was left to himself for a while, for Sam had fallen asleep. He was alone and feeling rather forlorn, although all about him the folk of Rivendell were gathered. But those near him were silent, intent upon the music of the voices and the instruments, and they gave no heed to anything else. Frodo began to listen. At first the beauty of the melodies and of the interwoven words in elven tongues, even though he understood them little, held him in a spell as soon as he began to attend to them. Almost it seemed that the words took shape, and visions of far lands and bright things that he had never yet imagined opened out before him, and the firelit hall became like a golden mist above seas of foam that sighed upon the margins of the world. Then the enchantment became more and more dreamlike, until he felt that an endless river of swelling gold and silver was flowing over him, too multitudinous for its pattern to be comprehended. It became part of the throbbing air about him, and it drenched and drowned him. Swiftly he sank under its shining weight into a deep realm of sleep. There he wandered long in a dream of music that turned into running water, and then suddenly into a voice. It seemed to be the voice of Bilbo chanting verses, faint at first, and then clearer ran the words. Earendil was a mariner that tarried in Arvernian. He built a boat of timber felled in Nimbrethel to journey in. Her sails he wove of silver fair, of silver were her lanterns made. Her prow was fashioned like a swan, and light upon her banners laid. In panoply of ancient kings, in chained rings he armoured him. His shining shield was scored with runes, to ward all wounds and harm from him. His bow was made of dragon horn, his arrow shorn of ebony. Of silver was his habergeon, his scabbard of chalcedony. His sword of steel was valiant, of adamant his helmet tall, an eagle plume upon his crest, upon his breast an emerald. Beneath the moon and under star he wandered far from northern strands, bewildered on enchanted ways beyond the days of mortal lands, from gnashing of the narrow ice where shadow lies on frozen hills, from nether heats and burning waste. He turned in haste, and roving still on starless waters far astray, at last he came to night of naught, and passed, and never sight he saw of shining shore nor light he sought. The winds of wrath came driving him, and blindly in the foam he fled from west to east, and errandless, unheralded he homeward sped. There flying Elwing came to him, and flame was in the darkness lit, more bright than light of diamond, the fire upon her carcanet. The Silmaril she bound on him, and crowned him with the living light, and dauntless then with burning brow he turned his prow. And in the night from other world beyond the sea, there strong and free a storm arose, a wind of power in Tarmenel, by paths that seldom mortal goes. His boat it bore with biting breath, as might of death across the grey and long forsaken seas distressed. From east to west he passed away. Through ever night he back was borne on black and roaring waves that ran o'er leagues unlit and foundered shores that drowned before the days began, until he heard on strands of pearl, when ends the world, the music long, where ever foaming billows roll the yellow gold and jewels won. He saw the mountain silent rise, where twilight lies upon the knees of Valinor, and Eldamar beheld afar beyond the seas. A wanderer escaped from night, to haven white he came at last, to elven home the green and fair, where keen the air, where pale as glass beneath the hill of Ilmarin, a glimmer in a valley sheer, the lamplit towers of Tirion are mirrored on the shadow mere. He tarried there from errantry, and melodies they taught to him, and sages old him marvels told, and harps of gold they brought to him. They clothed him then in elven white, and seven lights before him sent, as through the Calacarian to hidden land forlorn he went. He came unto the timeless halls, where shining fall the countless years, and endless reigns the elder king in Ilmarin on mountain sheer. And words unheard were spoken then of folk, of men, and elven kin. Beyond the world were visions showed, forbid to those that dwelt therein. A ship then new they built for him, of mithril and of elven glass, with shining prow, no shaven oar nor sail she bore on silver mast, the Silmaril as lantern light, and banner bright with living flame, to gleam thereon by Elbereth, herself was set, who thither came and wings immortal made for him, and laid on him undying doom to sail the shoreless skies and come behind the sun and light of moon. From Ever-Even's lofty hills, where softly silver fountains fall, his wings embore a wandering light beyond the mighty mountain wall. From World's End then he turned away, and yearned again to find afar his home, through shadows journeying and burning as an island star. On high above the mists he came, a distant flame before the sun, a wonder ere the waking dawn, where grey the Norland waters run. And over Middle-earth he passed, and heard at last the weeping sore of women and of elven maids in elder days, in years of yore. But on him mighty doom was laid, till moon should fade, and orb-bed star to pass, and tarry nevermore on hither shores where mortals are, for ever still a herald on an errand that should never rest, to bear his shining lamp afar, the Flammifer of Westerness.
The chanting ceased. Frodo opened his eyes and saw that Bilbo was seated on his stool in a circle of listeners who were smiling and applauding.
"Now we had better have it again," said an elf.
Bilbo got up and bowed. "I'm flattered, Lindir," he said. "But it would be too tiring to repeat it all."
"Not too tiring for you," the elves answered, laughing. "You know you're never tired of reciting your own verses. But really, we can't answer your question at one hearing."
"What?" cried Bilbo. "You can't tell which parts were mine and which were the Dunedain's."
"It's not easy for us to tell the difference between two mortals," said the elf.
"Nonsense, Lindir," snorted Bilbo. "If you can't distinguish between a man and a hobbit, your judgment is poorer than I imagined. They're as different as peas and apples."
"Maybe. To sheep, other sheep no doubt appear different," laughed Lindir, "or to shepherds. But mortals have not been our study. We have other business."
"I won't argue with you," said Bilbo. "I'm sleepy after so much music and singing. I'll leave you to guess, if you want to." He got up and came towards Frodo.
"Well, that's over," he said in a low voice. "It went off better than I expected. I don't often get asked for a second hearing. What did you think of it?"
"I'm not going to try and guess," said Frodo, smiling.
"You needn't," said Bilbo. "As a matter of fact, it was all mine, except that Aragorn insisted on my putting in a green stone. He seemed to think it was important. I don't know why. Otherwise, he obviously thought the whole thing rather above my head. And he said that if I had the cheek to make verses about the Arundel in the House of Elrond, it was my affair. I suppose he was right."
"I don't know," said Frodo. "It seemed for me to fit somehow, though I can't explain. I was half asleep when you began, and it seemed to follow on from something that I was dreaming about. I didn't understand that it was really you speaking until near the end."
"It's difficult to keep awake here until you get used to it," said Bilbo. "Not that hobbits would ever acquire quite the elvish appetite for music and poetry and tales. They seem to like them as much as food, or more. They will be going on for a long time yet. What do you say to slipping off for some more quiet talk?"
"Can we?" said Frodo.
"Of course. This is merry-making, not business. Come and go as you like, as long as you don't make a noise."
They got up and withdrew quietly into the shadows, and made for the doors. Sam they left behind, fast asleep, still with a smile on his face. In spite of his delight in Bilbo's company, Frodo felt a tug of regret as they passed out of the Hall of Fire. Even as they stepped over the threshold, a single clear voice rose in song.
Hoel bereth Gilthoniel, silivren pen a miriel, menel a glaelenas, na hired a palan diriel. O galas remen en oras, fan oelos le linathon, ne fair sine fairon.
Frodo halted for a moment, looking back. Elrond was in his chair, and the fire was on his face like summer light upon the trees. Near him sat the Lady Arwen. To his surprise, Frodo saw that Aragorn stood beside her. His dark cloak was thrown back, and he seemed to be clad in elven mail, and a star shone on his breast. They spoke together, and then suddenly it seemed to Frodo that Arwen turned towards him, and the light of her eyes fell on him from afar and pierced his heart. He stood still, enchanted, while the sweet syllables of the elvish song fell like clear jewels of blended word and melody.
"It's a song to Elbereth," said Bilbo. "They will sing that and other songs of the Blessed Realm many times tonight. Come on."
He led Frodo back to his own little room. It opened onto the gardens and looked south across the ravine of the Bruinen. There they sat for some time, looking through the windows at the bright stars above the steep climbing woods and talking softly. They spoke no more of the small news of the Shire far away, nor of the dark shadows and perils that encompassed them, but of the fair things they had seen in the world together, of the elves, of the stars, of trees, and the gentle fall of the bright year in the woods. At last there came a knock on the door.
"Begging your pardon," said Sam, putting in his head, "but I was just wondering if you would be wanting anything." "And begging yours, Sam Gamgee," replied Bilbo, "I guess you mean that it's time your master went to bed."
"Well, sir, there is a council early tomorrow, I hear, and he only got up today for the first time."
"Quite right, Sam," laughed Bilbo. "You can trot off and tell Gandalf that he's gone to bed. Good night, Frodo. Bless me, but it's been good to see you again. There are no folk like hobbits, after all, for a real good talk. I'm getting very old, and I begin to wonder if I should ever live to see your chapters of our story. Good night. I'll take a walk, I think, and look at the stars of Elbereth in the garden. Sleep well."
Chapter 2. The Council of Elrond. Next day Frodo woke early, feeling refreshed and well. He walked along the terraces above the loud-flowing Bruinen and watched the pale, cool sun rise above the far mountains and shine down, slanting through the thin silver mist. The dew upon the yellow leaves was glimmering, and the woven nets of gossamer twinkled on every bush. Sam walked beside him, saying nothing, but sniffing the air, and looking every now and again with wonder in his eyes at the great heights in the east. The snow was white upon their peaks. On a seat cut in the stone beside a turn in the path, they came upon Gandalf and Bilbo deep in talk.
"Hallo! Good morning," said Bilbo. "Feel ready for the great council?"
"I feel ready for anything," answered Frodo. "But most of all I should like to go walking today and explore the valley. I should like to get into those pine woods up there."
He pointed away far up the side of Rivendell to the north.
"You may have a chance later," said Gandalf, "but we can't make any plans yet. There's much to hear and decide today."
Suddenly, as they were talking, a single clear bell rang out.
"That is the warning bell for the Council of Elrond," cried Gandalf. "Come along now. Both you and Bilbo are wanted."
Frodo and Bilbo followed the wizard quickly along the winding path back to the house. Behind them, uninvited and for the moment forgotten, trotted Sam. Gandalf led them to the porch where Frodo had found his friends the evening before. The light of the clear autumn morning was now glowing in the valley. The noise of bubbling waters came up from the foaming riverbed. Birds were singing, and a wholesome peace lay on the land. To Frodo, his dangerous flight, and the rumours of the darkness growing in the world outside, already seemed only the memories of a troubled dream. But the faces that were turned to meet them as they entered were grave. Elrond was there, and several others were seated in silence about him. Frodo saw Glorfindel and Gloin, and in a corner alone Strider was sitting, clad in his travel-worn clothes again. Elrond drew Frodo to a seat by his side, and presented him to the company, saying, "Here, my friends, is the hobbit, Frodo, son of Drogo. Few have ever come hither through greater peril, or on an errand more urgent." He then pointed out and named those whom Frodo had not met before. There was a younger dwarf at Gloin's side, his son Gimli. Beside Glorfindel, there were several other counsellors of Elrond's household, of whom Erestor was the chief. And with him was Galdor, an elf from the Grey Havens, who had come on an errand from Círdan the shipwright. There was also a strange elf clad in green and brown, Legolas, a messenger from his father, Thranduil, the king of the elves of northern Mirkwood. And seated a little apart was a tall man with a fair and noble face,